For those of you expecting us to move on to the next Sefer in Treyos or Chagai, all I can do is apologize. One of our listeners, Shmuley from Brooklyn, pointed out that chronologically, at least based on the Jewish chronology, Chagai should not be the next Sefer that we learn right after we finish Zephaniah. Rather, we should be moving on to Megillas Esther. And unfortunately for all of you, I love Purim. And that really sparked something for me. So a lot of negotiation later, not only is Greenland going to be protected for American military, but I get to do Megillas Esther now in the middle. Also, with Purim coming up, that seems to be very, very, very appropriate. So we're going to move on now to Megillas Esther chronologically instead of Sefer Chagai, because Esther takes place before Chagai does in the Jewish tradition. Now, in the secular tradition, among Bible scholars, they argue very much the opposite. The timeline that most conventional scholars have is that Chagai and Zechariah, the reconstruction of the Beis HaMikdash, takes place between 520 and 515 before the Common Era. Malachi comes along 450 before the Common Era, some 65 years later. They place Megillas Esther in between that. They say that Esther takes place between 483 and 473 before the Common Era, between Perek Vav and Zion of Sefer Ezra, which we're not even up to yet. Now, this timeline really doesn't work well with Jewish tradition, because the king that gives permission for the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt is King Daryavesh, as we'll see in the very first pasuk of Chagai. And our tradition is that King Daryavesh, Darius, is the son of Esther and Achashverosh, which would mean his mama, Esther, is before that time period. Now, according to the Jewish tradition, we've got 52 years after the Churban Beis HaMikdash is when Koresh gives permission for the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. But that means that the Achashverosh story has to be before. Now, we know that Yirmiyahu HaNavi had prophesied that 70 years of Galus, and then will be the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. But there were miscalculations at the time, and perhaps ever since. 70 years from what? 70 years from the Churban? 70 years from Nebuchadnezzar getting the throne of Babel, which was before then? 70 years after the first Galus into Babel, which was 11 years before the Churban, or the second Galus into Babel? All of these were possibilities. And people didn't realize that it wasn't meant to be, at least not when they thought it was going to be. In fact, the Beis HaMikdash construction was stopped even after Daryavesh gave permission for it to take place. For 18 years, construction of the Beis HaMikdash stopped, and everything is kind of on hold. And the Jews, there's a wonderful shiur about this by Rabbi Shalom Rosner of Keren B'Yavne, YU Musmach. He said the Jews must have been very depressed and shocked that 70 years were up, but the enemies are thrilled. 70 years, there's no Beis HaMikdash. The way they had counted, they counted incorrectly. And Belshazzar holds a whole banquet that we're going to talk about when we learn Sefer Daniel, takes out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. Achashverosh thinks that the time is over. Haman is out there counseling him, don't worry, Hashem is not with the Jews anymore, you have nothing to worry about. Spoiler alert for us in Megillas Esther that we're about to do. Achashverosh wasn't so totally convinced, but Haman kept pushing. He said, the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, talks about, Am Echad, Mefuzam, Reforad, Bein Ho'amim, they're nothing, they've lost it, they're sleeping, they came to the party, they ate and drank from the Kalim. You have nothing to worry about. But we're going to see that the rebuilding is going to take place anyway. Now, who wrote this Sefer Megillas Esther that we're going to learn? The Gemara tells us in Bava Basra that it's Anshei Knesses HaGedola. Mordechai and Esther asked that it would be Kavnu Ledoros, that it would be Mesukan for generations, that it would become a part of Tanakh. And there were real questions about whether it was going to be included. But eventually, it was decided to include it in the canon, which is very important. The idea of Zos Zikaron B'Sefer, write this in a Sefer, that it's going to be in the Torah, in the Tanakh. We know also that Megillus Esther is kind of unique, that it is at one time a sefer called the Mishnas Yavetz. Really has a wonderful piece on this. And if it's the sefer I'm thinking of, it would be from the early 1920s. He talks about the Megillah is somewhere between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh. It's Torah Shebaalpeh that was recorded, but it was put in Tanakh as part of Torah Shebichsav. Ezra and Nehemiah are later. So this is actually chronologically earlier, but it was the last controversy about whether to include it or not. After the whole discussion about Shir HaShirim and Koheles, whether or not it should be included, Megillus Esther was the last one kind of included in the canon. But Megillus Esther, just as we start off, there's a million directions we could go. There's a book called Esther in America by Rabbi Dr. Stuart Halperin that includes all these think pieces like Haman and the American Revolution, American Ataxerxes, Esther and early modern political Hebraism, Esther the Queen and the Scarlet Letter, from the Shushan Palace to Uncle Tom's Cabin, Esther Aesthetic, and Esther in Art. There's a million places people like to go, particularly in modern feminist studies. There's a lot of discussion, as we talked about a little bit with Sefer Rus. But to keep to Pshat, which is where we usually go, we start with the history, which is what we talked about a little bit. We're in between the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the construction of the second Beis HaMikdash. We know that it's called Megillas Esther, not just because of Esther Hamalka, who is a major figure in it, but also the entire idea of Hester Panim, of the hidden hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu behind the scenes. It's all a big jigsaw puzzle. There's so many things that had to happen the way they do. Idea of this coincidence and that coincidence, and Mordechai being in the right place at the right time to overhear big son Vesaresh, for Haman to be feeling egotistical at exactly the wrong moment when King Ahasuerus is thinking about things late at night, reading from the Sefer Divrei HaYomim Lifnei HaMelech. All of this happens only because the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is guiding everything to happen. It just so happens. Nothing just so happens. It's seeing the Yad of Hashem in a way where Hashem's name isn't even mentioned, and there's various reasons given for that, why Hashem's name isn't present in the Megillah. Some see a tremendous parallel between the Megillah and the story of Yosef HaTzadik, which also seems to happen from happenstance that happens one thing after another. The handing over of the ring, the king can't sleep, riding on special animals, the stranger becoming the Mishneh LaMelech. All of this is part of how important Megillus Esther is. But just to wrap it up, tremendous point made by Rabbi Norman Lamb, who has a sefer that, because I saw this Dvar Torah, I actually ordered the sefer. It's supposed to come tomorrow. Thank you, Amazon. Actually, no, I ordered it from the OU, so it might come in a year and a day. But he wrote a sefer Megillah called Majesty and Mystery. And he says the Megillah is called Sefer Shalom Ve'emes, Peace and Truth. But the Shalom Va'emes can be read on two levels, revealed and concealed, open and hidden, an outer story and an inner story. All of it is being written, but it's also being written for two audiences. On the one hand, for the Jewish audience, for Klal Yisrael, the Geres is written for the Jewish people, showing us the truth of what's happening. But on the other hand, there's the element of shalom, because it's a document, secondarily, that has to satisfy, or at least not offend, Ahasuerus, his royal court, the official religion of the Persian Empire. And so that's one reason, some say, why Hashem's name doesn't appear in it. Because it was being written as a public document, and there were censors out there, while we're living in Golis and not in control of our own fate. It's interesting that Ahasuerus is a major character in the story. His name comes up constantly, which might be why he approved of the Megillah. On the other hand, what does Ahasuerus actually do in this story? He's a king that does nothing. The king who does everything is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why we read, and I apologize. I've been laning Megillus Esther. My mother bought me a Megillus Esther when I was 16. I'll deny that I would learn how to lane it. And at 17, I laid the Megillah for the first time, and now I'm 58. So for 41 years, I've been laying Megillus Esther. And so Trump is going to come out quite a bit. But it says it was in the middle of the night, and the melech, ha-melech, if you lane it, according to some of the traditions, you use the ha-melech from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Because nadadosh shnas ha-melech is the alleged sleep of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu roused himself on behalf of Klal Yisrael, on behalf of the Jewish people. Ahasuerus thought he was pretty active, but in reality he's completely passive. It's a different melech who is calling the shots of Megillah Esther. So I hope this kind of scattershot introduction to a Megillah that we know perhaps better than any other Megillah that we lane all year. But it's more than just Haman. It's more than just clopping. It's more than all of the different connections that we can make to Esther and to Purim. It's more than just the Sefer of Golos and Hester Panim. It's also a Sefer in Tanakh. And so we can go at it in our usual way, learning an awful lot of pshat. I am recording this now in early Shabbat. We have a month and a half. I don't think we'll finish before Purim, but we're going to do our best to make our Purim this year more meaningful as we think about what we've learned in this Sefer.